Let's continue reading verses 13 through 31 of Genesis 34. In this last half of Genesis 34, we have the deceitful agreement that Jacob's sons made with the Shechemites and the horrible massacre that took place at Shechem. Genesis 34, beginning at verse 13. But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, and spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. And they said to them, "We cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. But on this condition, we will consent to you. If you will become as we are, if every male of you is circumcised, then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone." And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So the young man did not delay to do the thing, because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of their city and spoke with the men of their city, saying, "These men are at peace with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade in it. For indeed, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people. If every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised, will not their livestock, their property, and every animal of theirs be ours? Only let us consent to them, and they will dwell with us." And all who went out of the gate of his city heeded Hamor and Shechem his son. Every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city. Now it came to pass on the third day, when they were in pain, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. And they killed Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city, because their sister had been defiled. They took their sheep, their oxen, and their donkeys, what was in the city and what was in the field, and all their wealth, all their little ones and their wives they took captive, and they plundered even all that was in the houses. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I." But they said, "Should he treat our sister like a harlot?" Once again, some background notes. Genesis 34 is not the most pleasant chapter in the Bible. The name of God is not even mentioned in this chapter. In the first half of the chapter, we have the rape of Dinah, Jacob's daughter. In the second half of the chapter, we have the massacre of the Shechemites by Jacob's sons. After Dinah was raped, Shechem the prince wanted to marry Dinah. At least this was an honorable move on his part, as we see in verse 19. So Shechem and his father Hamor tried to make an arrangement with Jacob and his sons. The sons of Jacob said, "Yes, Shechem can marry Dinah. In fact, we'll be willing to intermarry with you and trade with you, but on one condition: you must be circumcised." The sons of Jacob said it would be a reproach to marry anyone who was uncircumcised. But notice verse 13. The sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father and spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah their sister. So all the Shechemite males agreed, and they were circumcised outside the gate of Shechem. That gate area, by the way, can still be seen to this day in ancient Shechem, which is the modern Nablus. In fact, part of the wall associated with that gate is still standing. In verse 25, we see why the agreement was deceitful. There was no way the Shechemites could defend themselves or run in their painful condition, having just been circumcised. Simeon and Levi, two sons of Jacob, who were probably around 20 at this time, killed all the Shechemite males, including Hamor and Shechem. They plundered the city and took the women and children captives. Because of this horrendous deed, many years later, in Jacob's blessing of his sons, who were to be tribes in Israel, Simeon and Levi are sternly rebuked and lose out on blessing. I'm reading Genesis 49, verses 5 through 7. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitation. Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Genesis 49, verses 5 through 7. Well, so much for our background notes. Let's move now to our doctrinal or teaching points. Now, we have three doctrinal points, and they all have to do with misguided religious zeal. So, doctrinal point number one, misguided religious zeal results from the lack of spiritual leadership. Misguided religious zeal results from the lack of spiritual leadership. Where was Jacob during all of these doings? He seems to have faded into the background. The young sons, most of them in their teens, make the agreement with Shechem and Hamor. Was Jacob going to go along with the intermarrying of Israel with these pagan Canaanites? Was he going to go along with it for trading or commercial purposes? In any case, Jacob does not give his sons spiritual leadership here. Now, we must agree that it was religious zeal that promoted the sons to take the action they did. After all, their sister Dinah had been defiled. A disgraceful thing had happened in Israel, as we see in verse 7. This sin must not go unpunished. And the sons of Jacob wanted to eliminate any possibility of intermarriage with these pagans. So you can see that they had a good basis for their attitude. But it was misguided religious zeal. Their religious zeal got carried away with ruthless and excessive methods. And one of the reasons was the lack of spiritual leadership on the part of Jacob. Even after the deed is over, Jacob seems to be thinking only of himself. Look at how many times he uses the first person here in verse 30. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will scatter themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I." Lack of spiritual leadership here on the part of Jacob. Well, you know, the same is true today. Misguided religious zeal results from the lack of spiritual leadership. Illustration. Have you ever seen John 3:16 or Jesus saves spray painted on buildings or overpasses? Well, you've got to say, the teenagers who did that, I'm assuming it was teenagers, not 50-year-old people. I think you have to say that these teenagers did that out of religious zeal, but it was misguided zeal. But you see, where was the spiritual leadership in the home and in the church to teach these teenagers how to control and channel their zeal? Misguided religious zeal results from the lack of spiritual leadership. Doctrinal point number two, misguided religious zeal leads to sin in God's name. Misguided religious zeal leads to sin in God's name. Circumcision was a sign of the Abrahamic covenant, a holy covenant between God and his people. Do you see what's going on here? The sign of God's covenant was being used wrongly by the sons of Jacob in a deceitful way. It was actually blasphemy, and it led to a massacre, a horrible injustice. The sign of God's favor, circumcision, was used as a cover for murder and pillage. Misguided religious zeal leads to sin in God's name. The same is true today. There are many examples that could be given here. The religious pro-life zealot who shoots the abortionist is right in his pro-life position, but wrong in his action. It is misguided zeal. It has led to sin. Another example. One group of Christians that takes another group of Christians to court to supposedly protect God's property has let their misguided zeal lead them into sin, the sin of direct disobedience to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, that Christians should not take one another to court, but settle their differences outside worldly, secular, pagan courts. Misguided religious zeal leads to sin in God's name. Doctrinal point number 3, misguided religious zeal ruins the believer's testimony. Misguided religious zeal ruins the believer's testimony. You know, when Jacob moved into the area of Shechem, he built an altar there. We read in Genesis 33, verse 20, then Jacob erected an altar there and called it El Elohi Israel, meaning literally God, the God of Israel. Jacob probably thought that he and his family would be a testimony to the pagan Canaanites in that area. But now that possibility is over. Word of this massacre would travel far and wide. Jacob was right when he said in verse 30 that they would be obnoxious to the inhabitants of the land. Their chance for an effective testimony was ruined because of misguided religious zeal. The same is true today. Misguided religious zeal ruins the believer's testimony. Illustration. A number of years ago, when Emmaus Bible School was located in the Chicago area, we had a few overzealous students who decided to hold a prayer meeting in a local restaurant. Well, when it was obvious that the surrounding tables were being bothered by these religious fanatics, they prayed louder. In fact, one of these zealous students said to the others, "Let's pray these unsaved people out of here." Talk about misguided zeal. Needless to say, these students ruined their testimony to anyone in that restaurant. In fact, it affected the testimony of Emmaus as well. Misguided religious zeal ruins the believer's testimony. What about practical application? What will it take to bring revival in your life? What will it take to bring revival in your life? In Genesis 35, Jacob finally goes back to Bethel, where God had appeared to him about 30 years before this time. There is a revival in Jacob's life at that time. The revival could have come sooner. It could have come at the time of the wrestling match, about 10 years earlier. But Jacob, you see, continued to do things his own way and did not return to Bethel where God wanted him until after the tragic events of Genesis 34. It took the rape of his daughter Dinah and the ruthless and excessive acts of his sons to finally bring Jacob back to his senses and get him back to where the Lord wanted him. What will it take to bring revival in your life? You know, I have a student right now who has come to study the Bible at Emmaus because of a revival in his life. But it took a broken marriage and a near fatal motorcycle accident to bring him to this point. Maybe you're here this morning and you're not walking with the Lord. What will it take to bring revival in your life?